Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
Welcome back to Spouting Off. Karen Cataline, your happy host. And we are doing a special edition of Spouting Off here at the CPAC in Washington, D.C., Colorado. Conservative Political Action Committee. And boy, everybody and anyone is here, including my next guest, who is Anthony Fisher, political columnist for Business Insider. And I just met him, and tell me a little bit more. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Anthony, tell us a little more about what you do before we get into what we're going to talk about.
Well, I was the politics editor at Business Insider for a while, and now I've transitioned to columnist, where I once played it down the middle. Now I have my own opinions, are pretty heterodox. Mm-hmm. I kind of take no prisoners of any side. I've got my own principles. I'm not squishy middle, but I'm fully capable of praising and critiquing both sides of the political political aisle.
Wonderful. And you're here partly to talk about, we don't have a huge amount of time, but we have some time to talk about the current state of the Democrat clown show. Mm-hmm. And I was intrigued when my producer handed me Democratic race, in particular, moderates canceling each other out to let Sanders win. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just give it to you real quick. Mm-hmm. I can't stand when people think that just because they're not Bernie Sanders, they're moderates.
Yeah. Well,
they're not moderates even remotely.
Yeah, and that's not exactly how I'd even put it.
Good.
Because the data actually shows that if you combined all the moderates and I could put them against Warren and Sanders for the progressive vote, the idea that if there were one moderate candidate, that person would outpoll the two progressives, it's not true, because people are weird. They don't ideologically
really
line up perfectly. So we've got data. Our great data editor, Walt Hickey at Insider, has found that there are a tremendous amount of voters who their first choice might be Pete Buttigieg, but their second choice might be Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. And
they're not ideologues, probably like we are.
It's all about personality and familiarity.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Yeah, so there are people who are Bernie Sanders supporters, but their second choice might be Pete Buttigieg. So the idea that if there were only one moderate, they would slightly be beating the progressives is just not true.
It is so true, yeah. Anthony. We tend to superimpose our own political sensibilities. Mm-hmm. On people that have no such sensibilities at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not only are they not ideologues, but they don't even tune in until, I don't know, July into the political scene. It's hard to imagine, given that the left has politicized everything to such an extent. You know, it's hard to imagine. But so how do you see this shaking out? I hate to ask people to tell the future.
Yeah, and I won't.
Because
but I can.
I can't either. I don't prognosticate because it's too much fun watching as things progress.
And
but
I certainly have
what are
been
you watching?
I've been wrong enough to know that I don't have my finger on the pulse of the future.
Right.
I can say to the extent that I can diagnose anything, I truly believe that we are in a populist era. I don't believe that 2016 was an aberration. I think we're globally in a populist era. If you look at Brazil, if you look at Brexit, even look at the yellow vests movement in France. They're both on the left and the right. There's a real thirst for populism and a real disdain for the elites and establishment.
But isn't it bizarre that populism can have a flavor that socialist populism or free market populism, when in fact socialism by its very nature is elitist? People don't understand that.
Well, I don't know if it's so much a free market populism, because the populism on the right is actually also big government.
I think Donald Trump's flavor of populism is closer to conservatism than the so-called conservatives used to have. Maybe we have
tariffs?
A disagreement there.
Are tariffs free market? I mean, that's pretty protectionist.
it is, except only if, I don't always argue with my guests, but it's fun to argue with your guests. In the sense that maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm naive, and most people don't call me naive at all, I think that was used as a bargaining chip. I don't think that Trump is really for tariffs. I just think he used it as a bargaining chip, and he continues to win on that. Am I wrong?
Are you talking about a bargaining chip with China?
Like with China.
Perhaps. That battle isn't over yet.
We agree.
But the result of it was a tremendous amount of subsidies for the farmers who were hurt by the tariffs. So you've got a block on the free trade, and then you've got subsidies.
Yes.
I don't see free markets in either of those diagnoses.
And God willing, he'll have another term, and we'll get to see him start to employ less and less government instead of more.
Yeah, we'll see. I vote, and I've got principles, but I don't particularly have a dog in the fight. I just, you know, I report and I analyze and I talk to people, and that's why I feel like Bernie Sanders, the rise of Bernie Sanders, and it's not over yet. It's far from over. It could be over by next week, but we're not there yet. But I do believe that it's not surprising at all that Bernie Sanders is doing so well in the Democratic primary, because I believe we are in a populist era, and I do believe that just as Trump was not really a Republican but obliterated the Republican establishment, ran the table from the minute he went down that escalator until the nomination. Hmm. Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat. He's literally not a Democrat. Yet he's leading the Democratic primary.
Yeah, but. So how, if you take all of what you just said, which is wonderful, and you superimpose what this conference is about, mm-hmm. which is socialism versus America, mm-hmm. or America versus socialism, mm-hmm. beyond populism is this strain of virulent, socialist-loving millennials and others. Mm-hmm. How do you superimpose that onto what you just said about populism?
Well, I mean, there's a real ignorance to the what broad socialism is, because you have people like Bernie Sanders, most hardcore supporters, will say out of one side of their mouth that we don't want Venezuela, we don't want Cuba, we want Sweden. But then if you scratch them a little bit, they'll say Castro had reading programs.
They don't see their own authoritarianism even remotely.
Sure. And
not at all.
I mean, neither side has a lockdown on authoritarianism. But the millennials and Generation Z are way too young to remember the Cold War, and they kind of, to the extent that they are aware of it now, they sort of remember what they've been told, that a lot of it was like a Reagan or Nixon fever dream, and that of course Soviet communism was always going to collapse. It was inevitable, and it's just not true.
Naivete personified.
I mean, if you look at the New York Times archives in 1989 and 1990, they were predicting what are the next 25 years of the Soviet Union going to look like. Nobody saw it coming. The flaws in the system, it was not a fait accompli. We didn't know how it was going to end, if it was going to end peacefully, if when it ended.
It ended more in a whimper than a bang.
Yeah, but it was just,
that's for sure.
I mean, it's what's happened to Russia since, I don't think really proves the success of the transition. But, a lot of people, the way we fear, what happens if North Korea falls? I think there were a lot of fears about what was going to happen when the Soviet Union fell. There could have been mass starvation. There could have been refugees all over the place. And the immediate breakdown of the Soviet Union was a lot more peaceful.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. How can people follow you, get in touch with you, connect with you, Anthony Fisher?
You can follow me on Twitter, Anthony L. Fisher.
L. Fisher.
There is no C in Fisher. You can read my work on Business Insider, and you can listen to the podcast I produce called The Fifth Column, which you can also follow on Twitter at We The Fifth.
Wonderful. We The Fifth and We The People. Thank you, Anthony Fisher, for joining us.
My pleasure.
And we are at CPAC on Spouting Off, doing interviews with people just passing by, illustrative personalities, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your happy host, Karen Cataline, and we are bringing you interviews from CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, here from Washington, D.C., the Gaylord Hotel. And I'm delighted to have former Congressman Dave Bratt from Virginia's 7th District, Congressional District. Now he's the Dean of the Business School at Liberty University. Welcome to Spouting Off.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great. Boy, I'll bet you've been to lots and lots of CPACs. I've been to several myself.
Yep.
What do you think is different about this time, if anything? What are your observations?
Well, I just think it keeps getting bigger and better, and there's tons of young people all over, and I just live a couple hours down the road, so I see all my old friends up here, so I have a good time every time.
Yeah, it is fun. And I'm noticing something really special.
Yeah.
Not only is it an election year,
right,
but we've got the fighter this time.
Yeah, no,
usually
I know.
Usually it's always they got the fighter. They got the
good
guy who knows how to play the
right
media. We suddenly have the guy that knows how to play the media.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on.
And I also think that Donald Trump has modeled for people how to fight back.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I hope the Republicans watch.
Yeah.
I hope the Republican
leadership. That's what
I'm saying.
He's been teaching a master class.
He's shown them what to do. Let's see it.
But I really think, though, that we are on the front lines. The grassroots, everyday people are the ones who are going to really do the fighting back. Because it's been like, even, I hate to say, we drag a lot of Republicans kicking and screaming into fighting back. Because I don't know. What is your reasoning as to why that is, that they're just so darn polite and nice, while the Democrats are hammering away at the Supreme Court doors and screaming and yelling? And
it's, I came in fighting, kicking, and screaming, and kept that up for 4 years.
Mm.
And if you do that, the Washington Post and every liberal magazine and the New York Times and your own local papers will just pummel you. And so a lot of politicians just say, I can't deal with that.
They can't take the
heat. And they cave, right? And it is bad. It hits your family hard. It hits all your relationships hard. The left is a master. I taught economics and ethics for 20 years. Went to seminary.
Yeah.
They call you racist, sexist, this, that, and the other thing. There's no bottom to the gutter
on
the left.
Dave, you answered the question for me without even meaning to in some ways.
Yeah.
And that is, when we've watched for 3.5 years Donald Trump be pummeled beyond pummeled.
Yeah.
You can't pummel anybody more than Donald Trump has been pummeled.
That's right. It's amazing.
And he's extraordinary
because
he just doesn't care.
Yeah.
We know what he cares about. He's shown what he cares about.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I guess what you're saying is that there's a lot of people who get into politics that can't take the heat.
Yeah. Well, Trump's an exception because he's got 60 million, followers at his beck and call.
Yeah.
So he's got a huge bully pulpit.
Yeah, but he didn't always have that. So.
Yeah, well, I know. Yeah, well. Right.
It's true.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of integrity.
Maybe here's the compromise,
really,
is that it would be nice if the Republican Party defended their candidates, which does not happen. They don't come behind you and circle the wagons like the Dems do.
And you didn't find that when you were running?
It was zero.
Tell us about that.
I got zero money, zero support, zero committee meeting. Right? And that's because I was the best Republican. If you do what you promise for 7 years in the wilderness to repeal Obamacare, and then you stick to your guns.
You mean not like John McCain, who walks into the back of the house and puts his thumb down and says, oh, by the way, I changed my mind.
Right, and he's a media darling. Right?
Yeah.
And so if you do what you promised, you're going to get hit in then $1 trillion deficits every year and taking on China and tariffs and trade and all that. That was not cool 4 years ago, but it was the right thing to do.
And thank God you did the right thing.
No, I feel
and
that's
so we
the way
are
I
so
wanted
grateful.
You. That's the way I wanted.
And that's why our founders, isn't it, decided that you should, especially in the House, that you're supposed to be a civilian legislature. You're
that's
supposed
nice,
to come in,
that's a nice
serve.
Dream.
What?
That's a nice dream.
Yeah.
Right.
You're supposed to serve and then leave. You're not supposed to be there for 47 years.
Yeah, right.
Don't you love Nadler and these guys who are blaming Donald Trump when they've been there for, 25, 30, 35 years?
Well, and I want to give the president a call out because Pelosi's tanking him on, blaming the virus on Trump this morning.
Yes.
And President Trump is the first president in 30 years that took China on head-to-head. When it wasn't cool to do that. And
that's
he took
right.
all the slings. And then now our supply chains are all a mess. And we're doing 85% of the pharmaceutical manufacturers in China.
Mm-hmm.
So if China shuts it down, we're in big trouble.
And
right?
I wonder about, the Democrats suddenly made a 180 going against Russia.
Yeah.
Here are a bunch of communist socialists saying that now they're against Russia.
Yeah.
But what kind of business they doing with China, Michael Bloomberg?
Well, and Biden and Pelosi, et cetera. So who are the globalists? They're all the globalists. And
they
Trump takes that on, globalization. Yep. And so,
what hasn't he taken?
Yeah,
it's extraordinary.
A beautiful thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So tell us about the business school at Liberty University.
Yeah, well, we pay attention to the fundamentals. We got a Falkirk Center we just propped up with President Falwell and Charlie Kirk. And it's dedicated to faith and freedom, right? The two big founding American principles. Jesus and Jefferson, President Falwell will say once in a while, just to summarize very succinctly what we're up to.
Right.
But in the U.S., it's kind of a paradox. Conservatives get it, but you have to have the rule of law and private property rights, et cetera, to have freedom. You don't just have freedom. It has to be circumscribed within the Constitution, and certain rights are guaranteed, and the government's supposed to stay out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And internationally, we do not have that now.
No.
Right? And so we set up the rules of the game after World War II, went really well, peace, prosperity for 50 years, but now China is the 800-pound gorilla. And
right.
So now, hopefully, the Republican leadership is figuring out you have to have rules of the game. Our firms are all profiteering, going to China. Right? So they're all going there to make their last dollar of profits. And it's hurting us.
Yes.
And so where's the principle there that's going to keep that from happening? Well, now we got a disaster that's shining the light on that problem.
Uh-huh.
And so it's too bad it had to come to that. But now everyone's seeing real clearly what the Chinese care about. And
right.
It's not people.
Well, when you're talking about a regime that harvests organs,
yeah.
I mean, it's amazing
right.
how they've kept that out of
yep.
the mainstream media.
Yeah.
I don't even call them. I call them the legacy media.
Yeah.
Then you know yeah. that they pick and choose what news that they want
yeah.
us to know.
Yeah, they have a million minimum Uyghurs out west, right? Turkic, Chinese in re-education camps. A minimum of a million Uyghurs, right?
Wow.
And no one knows this, right? So the billionaire class on the Democrat side doesn't particularly care, right? It's the socialists don't seem to care about the downtrodden in the world. There's hardly anything worse you could conceive of.
Yeah. Do we have any time left to, let me ask our Mr. Producer, we got a little bit more time. We got, yeah, so...
Good.
So what are you thinking about the Democrats, the Democrat clown show over there?
Yeah.
Do you have a preference as to who you think Trump should run against?
Well,
I got my thoughts.
Yeah.
What are yours?
Well, I love Bernie. He's the logical extension of everything we've been talking about, right?
Yes.
There's no upper bound on what tax rates should be that any Democrats ever mentioned.
Hmm.
There's no upper bound on spending that any Democrats ever mentioned. Right? And so... If you follow that logic, it's socialist, right? And then you can follow your way to Venezuela. First of all, what do? They get rid of your free speech rights. Then they come get your guns like they're doing in Virginia right now. They get rid of the religion, and they say, trust us.
I didn't even get to ask you about that. You're from Virginia.
Yeah. Oh,
well,
yeah.
I'm from Colorado.
Yes, right.
And so they're doing the same thing to Colorado.
Yes.
The exact same thing in the red flag laws and all of that. I got to tell you, our most outspoken sheriff in Weld County, northern Colorado, was just red flagged by one of the people in his jail.
Yeah. Well, there you have it.
There you go.
There you have it, right?
You know. Well, it is wonderful to have you. How can
people
find you? Do you
Liberty, go to Falkirk Center at Liberty University and
Falkirk Center
and
at Liberty University.
We've got young people reaching out to about 20 million other young people.
That's important through
Liberty, and so the word's getting out, and
that's great.
Everyone's giving us a good look right now because. Our students like to serve God, country, and the
all the
world.
Things the socialists find threatening.
Right, that's right. Right.
That's what it is.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you.
No, thank you very much,
Mr. Brett, former congressman, for joining us here on Spouting Off.
Anytime.
We're going to take a break right now. We are offering a special edition of Spouting Off here in Washington D.C. at CPAC. Stay with us. Welcome to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Cataline. And I am delighted to be here live with a special edition of Spouting Off from CPAC. That is the Conservative Political Action Committee. And boy, is it, you can hear in the background, there's noise, there's crowds, there's President Donald Trump will be here, and I'll be giving a commentary about that. So we have some special guests to offer to you and to share. Boy, you can just flag them right down off Radio Row. They're everywhere. So this is a special treat, and thanks right up front to Main Street Radio Network. That's www.mainstreetradionetwork, who I am here as a fill-in and a helper to Main Street Radio. And so by the auspices of them, I get to do a couple of extra special episodes at CPAC for Spouting Off. My very first guest right off the bat is Dylan Stevenson, who is, you're going to love this. This is,
He is a candidate for U.S. House of Representatives in New York, and guess who he is challenging? The wonderful, the venerable, the full of charisma, Jerry Nadler. So thank you for joining us live here. Dylan Stevenson, welcome to CPAC, welcome to Spouting Off.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for having me. I think the pleasure is all mine.
Oh, and you can hear that marvelous British accent. See, you taught us how to speak, and we screwed it all up.
I disagree. You could argue you improved it, perhaps. I remember reading that the American accent is closer to what Shakespeare would have spoken on account of the fact that many people from that part of the country came to the United States in the early days of the colonies.
So. Well, maybe after he had a few beers. I don't know.
A couple of drinks, and then there you go.
Yeah, so before we get into your campaign, is this your first time at CPAC?
This actually is.
I
studied at the University of Notre Dame, and I was the vice president of the College Republicans there. And as part of that, we helped other people go to CPAC, and we set up groups, but I'd never actually been myself. And so to be able to come for the first time as a candidate, not a student or a visitor, is a remarkable thing to be able to do, and it's been an absolute pleasure so far.
That is so great. I get a special tickle out of the fact that a Brit comes here and appreciates freedom, since we had a fight for freedom against you guys.
Yeah. So perhaps unsurprisingly, it's not taught that much in British schools. But, you know,
We're trying to get them to teach a little freedom here in our schools as well.
Frankly, we could use it.
Yes.
But I forget who said it, but Washington fought King George III, but Eisenhower fought with Winston Churchill.
There you go.
And so, you know, you have that switch over the course of a couple hundred years, realized actually we're on the same side here. You know, a bickering over taxes is not enough to undermine what I consider the most important alliance in the world, without a doubt.
Oh, you speak so beautifully.
Oh, thank you very much.
And we have our own little, not so little Winston Churchill these days, fighting everybody. His name is Donald Trump.
He's certainly fighting the good fight on our behalf.
Yes. Behalf. I love it. So tell us about your campaign.
Sure.
And why did you decide to challenge I keep calling him the venerable Jerry Nadler.
Our dear friend in Washington.
Nattering Nadler.
For those of you who can't see me, I'm 25 years old. I'm a millennial through and through.
A strapping young man he is.
Why, shucks, thank you. but I'm deeply concerned about the fact that so many in my generation are turning towards socialism. And that's not hyperbole. We actually have data to back that up. A YouGov poll from last year shows that 50% of millennials have a more favorable view of socialism than of capitalism. 73% of millennials say they'd be open to voting for a socialist. Now, anyone who studied history or current affairs, you know, whether you're looking at the Soviet Union or China or Venezuela or Cambodia or Cuba, knows damn well how bad an idea that is. But unfortunately, whether it's our school systems, our media, something has failed there. And so what I want to do is use this platform not just to make the case for conservatism against socialism, but hopefully to use this office as a springboard for dealing with the problems that are driving people towards socialism. And this is really where Jerry Nadler comes in. Unfortunately, he's been in Congress since 1992, and to put that into perspective, I was born in 1994. He's been there a damn long time. And while he's been there, rent in New York has skyrocketed, making it harder for people to get on the housing, on the property ladder. Fewer people there are 70,000 homeless New Yorkers right now, 400,000 living in NYCHA. Student debt is affecting 44 million Americans. Healthcare costs are rising, all while Jerry Nadler has been in Congress, had the reins of power in his hands. He has failed to address these problems, and so we need to get him out, have a new generation in new blood who are going to deal with the problems that are driving people towards socialism.
I love your passion. You sound like Nigel Farage.
I met him yesterday. I had a fanboy moment.
Great?
Oh,
fanboy moment.
Oh, it was wild. I sent that picture to my mother. She loved it.
Well, and so here's the thing, you know, as not a millennial, several generations past the millennial.
Yeah.
So I have one.
Oh.
I want to ask you if you have sound bites and memes. I have only a couple. I'm collecting them in order to explain. You know, like Charlie Kirk's socialism sucks.
Yes.
I mean, in two words.
Yeah.
Mine is, ask yourself why there's cheese in the mousetrap.
Oh, that's a good one.
Isn't that a good
That's a good one.
Instead of getting way down deep, and then you can also say, you know, there's a reason. You understand the Nigerian businessman who wants to give you $10 million, and you delete that email?
Yeah.
How come you still buy into the lie of socialism?
Yeah.
Same thing.
It's exactly the same thing. And, you know, in the subject of memes, we are, you know, my team and I are preparing for meme warfare. We have a bank, a sort of a photo bank full of templates that we're working on putting out.
Yeah.
That's
coming. We're a very new campaign, so we're trying to get the thing. We've just got the website up. We've got the WinRed up. We've got our social media up. We just got verified on Twitter yesterday.
Wonderful.
We're doing.
Wait till they take you off.
Yeah. Well,
you will have arrived then.
once they shadow ban me, I know I've made it.
Oh, that's my goal in life.
Once that's the sort of conservative badge of honor.
That's right.
So we'll have all that kind of up and running. But at the moment, it's kind of getting the infrastructure in place and making sure that we're in a position to really make the case and have the platform in the first place.
So do you have a meme or a short little slogan? Because we can never have too many of them.
The morally woke, intellectually broke, something like that could work.
So we've got that.
Thank you. Ours is very sort of picture based. So you'll see them on our social media coming.
Yeah, and. Well, socialists wanted to redistribute everyone else's wealth except their own.
Yeah, well, it's socialism for the many and not for them.
Right.
We mentioned my campaign. My district, as I said to you a bit before we started, is one of the most heavily Jewish districts in the country. It's got Borough Park and the Upper West Side. And I was obviously very proud to march alongside thousands of New Yorkers against anti-Semitism back in January.
Baruch Hashem.
I'm afraid
that means thank God.
Oh, well, indeed, thank God for many things.
Thank God, yes.
But, in the UK, socialism was just roundly rejected. Jeremy Corbyn was voted, was crushed in the election.
Yeah.
But his slogan was for the many, not the few. And somebody pointed out to me that when it comes to Jeremy Corbyn, this noted anti-Semite, that really his slogan should have been for the many, not the Jew.
Not the Jew.
Yeah, he's
exactly.
And you see this sort of anti-Semitic on the... And there's always been anti-Semitism on the far right, which we have to do everything to suppress and defeat. But you also see it now in the more mainstream on the left. Jeremy Corbyn was endorsed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders. Mm. And you see Ilhan Omar's work, her sympathies are well known.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to defeat that on both the right and the left should be a noble goal.
Yeah. Well, we're just the canaries in the mine shaft, Dylan.
Sadly,
I mean, we're only the first they go after, usually, not always. But where Jews are in danger, everyone else is not far behind. And Christians are major targets today.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at what happened in the Middle East.
We have about 2 minutes. So before we continue, because I could talk to you for another hour.
Absolutely.
And I'll have you on again.
I would love to be back.
And it'll probably be by telephone and not face-to-face. Mm-hmm. So this is, I'll have to remember this in my brain. Tell everybody how they can throw a few bucks towards your campaign.
Sure.
And how they can learn more about it so they can get involved.
Sure. So if you go to my website, StevensonForCongress.com.
Okay. Testing.
Yeah, you're good.
Sorry. Okay. So welcome, Elizabeth Harrington, to Spouting Off. We were talking off air about there being something special here. You've been to many CPACs, but there's something going on. It's 2020. We're seeing 2020. What are your observations thus far?
It's almost like being at a Trump rally, right? There's all this energy and spirit, and everyone's happy because we love what's going on in our country, and we're so unified. And I was speaking on another. I'm up and down Radio Row today.
Yes.
It takes you like 10 minutes to get back here because it's so packed. But we were talking about what's happening. You know, usually at CPAC, there's always great energy because you have the young college students. You have people never maybe been to D.C. They're getting into politics. But there's this different kind of energy when you had a Democrat in office with Obama. Everyone was really energized against that. But then when you usually had a Republican, there's some energy. But now we have the power, but we're not complacent. We have the White House, but we're not complacent because every single day he's fighting. And there's so much resistance and hostility to just common sense principles. And President Trump never lets them own the discussion or the narrative. He pushes back. He doesn't let them define him. And
he
plays
offense every day.
Exactly. And that's inspiring. Everyone wants to kind of go out there and play offense.
Exactly. Elizabeth, I think, among other things, that Donald Trump is the answer to a prayer on so many levels. Those of us who have been in politics, and there are people been in it longer than I, much, much longer than I, over 20 years, we've been hoping and praying and desperately wishing that we'd have a fighter in the White House.
Yeah.
Somebody who truly believed in free markets, who truly believed in less government, less regulation, and that could fight the corruption and the lies and the narrative of the left And here we have it. And I think that's one of the reasons why Republicans are happy and cheerful, and Democrats have their chins on the floor, their hair's on fire, they're angry, they look like they woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and all they do is lecture you about how they know and you don't.
Exactly. And it's that can-do fighting spirit that is so just innate in Americans. We love that. And finally, we have somebody who every single day is just sticking up for the country. I mean, this novel thought, hey, we're the greatest
America
place on
first.
Earth.
How dare you, you xenophobe?
Right. and we're just so sick and tired of having to apologize for everything and everyone telling you that you're wrong, you're
be
a bigot,
put on
you're
the
sexist.
Defensive.
And they're going to do that to you no matter what.
Exactly.
And so that's what we're so sick and tired of. You know,
right.
You can do it. It's not like he's a counterpuncher. Mm-hmm. He's not just picking fights with everybody. And, you know, when you talk about that, the way the billionaire from New York outsider is sticking up for fundamental values like the right to life.
He's a blue-collar billionaire.
It is amazing. Yeah. And last night, African American History Month, they had a reception. He brought on to stage a civil rights hero, Gertrude Jane Holliday Stone, almost 90 years old. She gets up on stage. She refused to get off a train. Had the cops come, all these, you know, in the 1950s. She refused. And she gets up there and says, it's all about fight, you know, do something for humanity. And she goes, Mr. Trump, thank you for all you do for humanity. And it was just this incredible moment. Talk about unifying that the media will never try to show you, but this gets through.
They're living
people
in it.
People know, and they can say, throw every name at you in the book. People get it. They see it. The media has been lying about this president from the very beginning. They're
from
not going to stop.
Minute.
But they've been proven wrong again and again,
again
and again. And at a certain point, people, normal people that maybe didn't vote for President Trump the first time, maybe you're a registered Democrat, at a certain point, you're saying, well, this guy's been consistent, and he's been consistently right. And look at the results in my life. Look at the money I have in my checking account. Look at look at the wage growth. Look at my community. People getting back into the labor force at historic numbers after just the anemic growth and the stagnation of the Obama-Biden years of ever-growing government, and just saying, it's the best contrast. What, after 8 years coming in on hope and change, what was Barack Obama's closing pitch?
It was,
you can't do that. You didn't build that. Need a magic wand.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
Those jobs are gone. Get used to it. It's what we can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And now President Trump is saying, what can't we do?
Yeah.
And it's this great optimism that's contagious, and it absolutely comes from the top. He's a fighter. He's putting the country first.
And it comes from the heart.
Absolutely.
It does.
It really does.
I just love to see your enthusiasm, because I rail against the left all the time because they're pushing an alternate universe. They're trying to tell us that what we're looking at doesn't exist and what we aren't looking at exists. You know, he's a con man. He's this.
Russian
he's that.
Asset.
He's mentally ill. Right? And you look at the left and they're screaming bloody murder, hammering on the Supreme Court walls. Who's mentally ill here?
I mean, when you look at all these different things that have been such defining moments, and I think President Trump has continued to fight for the right thing, what was right. And look at Brett Kavanaugh. That's the reason why we grew our majority in the Senate.
Yeah.
That hysteria, the banging on the doors of the Supreme Court. Of a false accusation. After false accusation. And that's what they've hurled against President Trump.
Exactly.
And
that was just a dress rehearsal for what they did to Trump.
Totally.
Yeah.
And the day after their hoax, collusion, Hillary's bought and paid for lies, foreign solicited, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
The day after Bob Mueller testifies and showing what a scam that was.
Huge.
Then they start their next one. Oh, let's move over to Ukraine.
They never said, oh, you know what? Sorry. Just like Gilda Radner. Never mind.
No, right. They never apologized.
They never ever back off. It's just one thing, and now it's coronavirus.
Right. Now they were rooting for a recession. Now they're rooting for a pandemic. I mean, it's just tiresome at this point. And thank God we have President Trump in the White House during a situation like this.
There's a lot of unknown that could have fought.
Right. And there's a lot of unknown. But thank God we have a leader like that and not these Democrats who are shilling for communist Soviet Union or shilling for communist China on that debate stage.
Exactly.
It's closed societies that have made this situation worse. But, hey, I love what President Trump said. This is the country that can get through things like this. We're in the best position in the world, and the bold leadership he makes every single day, it's really inspiring, and you can see it all around you here today.
Yeah, and you know what else? He's inspired the grassroots people to fight back too.
Yeah,
because
it can be dispiriting, right?
Conservatives weren't fighting back either.
Right.
And now they look at Donald Trump, and what I tell people when I
do
guest things, I say, you don't have to be Trump. Who could be? You get to be the best you to fight back.
Right.
Just employ the fight back with your personality, and you'll see who's basically a gift from God, in my opinion.
It's amazing.
He really
look
is.
At the way he's sticking up for religious freedom.
Yes.
The most pro-life president we've ever had.
Yes. Oh, and he's an...
It's so incoherent, but that's what's so great, because they've twisted themselves around their 360-degree circle. I mean, but what President Trump has been right there, the same person yesterday and today, and he's going to continue to deliver on all those promises he's made.
Okay. I got a minute left. You are just a delight. I could talk to you for another
hour. It's so fun.
Elizabeth Harrington. And I don't know if people can reach you. Usually I'm always, you know,
plugging DonaldJTrump.com. I'm plugging TrumpVictory.com.
You're plugging America first.
Absolutely.
That's what you're plugging.
And it's great. And
it's great.
We're so unified, and it's so exciting. What
Except
a great time.
For Mitt Romney, and he was disinvited to CPAC, so I'm cool
There's
with that.
There's always one.
There's always one. Anyway, thank you so much, Elizabeth. It's great to have you.
You bet.
We're going to be back with Spouting Off and more from our special edition here at CPAC. And your host, Karen Cataline, having a blast. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your happy host, Karen Cataline, and we are at CPAC in Washington, D.C., the Conservative Political Action Committee, and we're doing just interview after interview, grabbing people right in front of Radio Row to come down and sit here and talk to us. People are excited. They're thrilled. We are hot and heavy into the 2020 campaign. Donald Trump is here this weekend, and so we thought we'd bring you some interviews from CPAC. And joining us right now is Cabot Phillips, Editor-in-Chief for the Leadership Institute. I've done a couple classes with them. Campus Reform. He's a regular commentator on Fox News Channel, Fox Business, to offer insight on the youth vote and trends on college campuses. Oh, that must keep you busy.
And then we
also have Gabriel Nadalis, Antifa member, oh my.
Former.
Yeah.
Turned conservative activist. How long you got? I got to talk to both of you. He is a student rights advocate for the Leadership Institute, and his Behind the Black Mask tour encourages college students to engage in dialogue rather than violence. Seems rather commonsensical to me. Welcome to Spouting Off, Gabriel and Cabot Phillips. Let me start with Cabot Phillips. Tell us about your project and what are you doing? Because that is the heavy lifting in politics today going on college campuses.
Yeah. So we are an online watchdog, campusforum.org. We're the largest college news site in America. We just hit our 10th year, 10th anniversary, and we expose liberal bias and abuse on college campuses. So we have
We have our hands full.
We have a team of 110 student reporters on campuses around the country who are kind of the eyes and the ears, writing stories, exposing what's going on in the classroom, because we can do all the research we want from our office in Virginia, but it's very difficult to tell what's going on campus, in the classroom, with the administration. So we have student reporters that send us tips, expose what's going on, and full team of writers here in D.C. and Northern Virginia that help kind of shine a light on what's going on. Our belief is that light is the best disinfectant, and there is a lot of disinfecting needed on our college campuses when it comes to the bias
there. It's swampy out there.
So we are trying to wake people up to where their tax dollars are going, what they're funding, and what's really going on, and how universities are oftentimes more concerned with indoctrinating than with teaching.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I got some more questions for you. Gabriel Nadalas, so I got to just cut right to the chase. What was it that turned you around from an Antifa member to a College Campus Leadership Institute activist? And whatever it is, can we bottle it?
Well, I really have to give thanks to the Leadership Institute, because there was a regional field coordinator in California who really introduced me to conservatism. He gave me a lot of books, and he told me all of the different things that I needed to do to really understand the conservative message. But most of all, he taught me something that is something that I do to this day, which is just to learn to listen instead of talking. Antifa does a lot of talking, but without ever taking the time to consider who they're fighting. And unfortunately, that just leads to violence of people, or of innocent people.
And I think I just want to jump in here. It's interesting, in talking with Gabe, he pointed out to me, he said, hey, when I was in Antifa, I started to get fishy when I would just ask questions of fellow Antifa members. Talk a little
get
about
fishy?
That. You start to ask, or
what
think
do you mean,
get fishy? You'd get kind of concerned about the group when you start to ask questions and how they responded.
And how they treat you when you ask questions.
Exactly. So
right.
In 2012, I was actually introduced to my first economics class to Thomas Sowell, Milton Friedman, and I found these ideas really interesting, but I disagree with them. I didn't agree with them. I thought that they were just some fairy tale kind of like stories that I wanted to learn more about. So I went over to Antifa activists, and I told them about these things. And instead of them engaging with me and dispelling these quote-unquote myths, as I thought, they started criticizing me. They would insult me, started using the same types of intimidation they use against other fascists or so-called fascists. And it made me realize that Antifa is not really fighting fascism. They're just fighting anyone who is not a radical leftist.
They are
like
fascists.
Them. They are. And in fact, in 2018, the German government released a report on Antifa, because people think it's an American thing. No, it's an international movement that's been around for almost 100 years. And in 2018, they quoted an Antifa group from Munich, Germany, in which they said, the fight against against fascism is not over until we dismantle capitalism. They are fighting.
That's what it's about.
They are fighting everything that is American. They're not fighting fascism.
So let me ask you, what was it, Gabriel, that attracted you to it in the first place?
Well, it's pretty much in the name, anti-fascism. We all, as Americans, we're all anti-fascism. I mean, we fought a war over against fascism. The problem
is not just fascism, but authoritarianism in general.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, that's kind of where Antifa comes from. In the 1930s, it was the first Antifa group, which is part of the KDP, the German Communist Party, which was funded and bankrolled by Joseph Stalin. That's what it really started off as. And they would call everybody a fascist, even back then, not just the neo-Nazis, but other liberal groups who also oppose the Nazis.
So they can divert attention from their own fascism.
Exactly.
I mean, it's projection.
Exactly. And so this is why it really attracted me to being an anti-fascist. And to this day, I'm still an anti-fascist, but it's just I don't want to ever be associated with that group ever again.
So I've just got to ask Gabriel another question. I am on a mission to come up with memes, because young people so respond to memes and slogans and mottos. You can't give them a long dissertation on the Laffer curve, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You got to have these things. My favorite thus far, and I'm going to just keep repeating it all year long, is ask yourself why there's cheese in the mousetrap. Mm. Why is there cheese in the mousetrap? So they're offering you something, and then when the trap closes shut, it's too late. So what do you think, from your being on the inside and making this drastic change from being a free marketeer and understanding conservative views and Milton Friedman, for heaven's sake, I mean, you know, that's one of the great guys, right? And Thomas Sowell, love Thomas Sowell. What was it? It's. I'm a social worker. I have an MSW from Columbia University, of all places. And I'm constantly fascinated by cults and how people get out of cults. And I do believe liberalism and leftism is a cult. So what do you think is the anti-cult message? What do you think is going to break through and help people see that they've been duped? Because nobody likes to admit they've been duped.
right?
We have to treat people as people and not as political pawns. And that's exactly what I talk about in my my tour, Behind the Black Mask. I do a couple of things in that in my speech. First, I dispel all the myths about Antifa and how it's not actually fighting fascism, but just capitalists and anyone who really is fighting for freedom. But I also talk about how the left wants to put you in a little box. And if you don't fit that box, they will shun you. They don't care about you as a person.
Right.
They just want to advance their political ideology.
Right. Is there a marketing slogan that you think would break through to some of these guys who you know, they're anti-fascist? What about you, Cabot?
Yeah.
What have you got that, I mean, because I love Charlie Kirk's, you know, Socialism Sucks. But yeah. More. We need more.
Yeah,
more.
I think freedom is a message that sells ultimately. And, you know, I think breaking down people's misconceptions about what ideas like socialism are and leftism in general are, and
right.
reminding people that, you know, what we're fighting for is ultimately the individual. We're fighting for your right to
exactly.
make your own decisions. And
exactly.
we always talk about the idea of choice and autonomy. And we neglect those things when it comes to actual individuals. And the left especially does, where they don't care about personal autonomy and having the right to make up your own mind.
No,
yourself.
They want to put down personal autonomy.
Exactly. They want to encourage groupthink. And that's what we see on college campuses. I've also been on over 100 college campuses and interviewed thousands of students. And I've seen firsthand how many of them feel this pressure to go along with what they think they're expected to say. And so I think, when we talk about groups like Antifa, we talk about kind of the protest culture on college campuses. I think it's important to analyze why it's happening. And so I think every generation, especially young people, they want to feel like they're fighting some kind of injustice.
Yes.
The thing is, America is the most equitable society we've ever had
exactly.
that's ever existed. And so they still want to feel like they're fighting against some kind of injustice. And so they make up these big problems
that's
to
what
say
the
they're
left
fighting.
Does.
And that's what I think Antifa's
have an idea.
Doing.
That you can borrow and you can use. You can't borrow it. You can have it. One of my ideas, because I'm thinking about this a lot, and I'll have you on again, or I'll try to. My idea is that in people's personal life, they employ common sense that they don't apply when it comes to politics. For example, they know that if they're living in their parents' basement and their parents are paying the bills, paying the freight, they got to do what their parents says.
Yeah.
But when they go out in the world and they look at politics and they say the government's going to give you free college and free this and free that and free health care, and you don't think they're going to be telling you what to do? Welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your happy host, Karen Cataline, here on site in Washington, D.C. at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. And boy, are we having fun. We're just grabbing guests off the, you know, on Radio Row, there's just one guest after another. And I have a terrific guest right now, Jocko Boyens, who is actively fighting against child sex trafficking in the U.S. and globally, giving aid and linking with agencies such as the TSA, FBI, and the police department, CIA, ICE, and Homeland Security. SRT. What's SRT?
Special Response Team.
I should know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Jocko is an international speaker and presenter on several humanitarian issues, as well as serving on the nonprofit boards of Traffic 911 and Share Together. Thank you. Welcome to Spouting Off, Jocko.
Thank you, Karen. And as of recent, one of the things I'm most proud of is being a fellow at the Falkirk Center at Liberty University, where we fight for our Judeo-Christian values in the public sector, where it intersects with politics and media and those kind of things. So thank you for having
Wonderful.
Me.
Wonderful. How did you come by doing this work? It's really tough and
intense work. 1994, I was a senior in high school in South Africa. My sister was 13, and my sister was sex trafficked for 6 years. So Ilanka went through, my sister's name is Ilanka, went through an ordeal. Incredible, right? Mm. Very tough, and that's how we got involved. And you know, and we fight, but we fight for every child. No child should ever go through that. No child should go through abuse, because that is, in fact, our future. That is America. It is our children.
Yes.
What are we fighting for today? Why is this right. election so important? If it's not for our children, it's the most bipartisan issue of them all. Mm. The safety of our children. Unfortunately, there's only one side of the ledger that's fighting this fight, and that is the conservative
that is
movement.
True. That is true.
Yeah.
Tell me something. When people hear sex trafficking, now I happen to be a social worker. I went to
Thank you.
Columbia University. I mean, I don't practice anymore, but I try to apply some of what I know.
Yeah.
to my politics, because how many conservative social workers do you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of people, when they hear sex trafficking, without getting, well, you can be as graphic as you want, but only if it's necessary. Help people understand, what do people need to know and understand about sex trafficking that they simply do not know?
Look, I need people to understand it's not prostitution. So let's draw lines. What's prostitution, what's human trafficking, and what's sex trafficking? There's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk sex trafficking, we're talking about child sexual exploitation, right, of minors, 17 and under. It's an epidemic in our country. We are the leading nation in the world, commercializing sex with children. Nobody's close. It's a $150 billion industry worldwide. $32 billion of that $150 is inside the United States. We're talking about America.
It's not prostitution when you have minors who are not at the age of consent. That's part of what you're talking about, right?
Age of consent actually has nothing to do with prostitution.
Nothing.
Prostitution, in its true definition, means complete free will. Okay? Only 2% of women and men today that are deemed prostitutes are actually prostitutes. If you've ever been abused as a child, forced to have sex, or been coerced, you're not a prostitute. You're a victim. You can't take a child and the child all of a sudden is abused sexually at 16. And now she turns 18, and now all of a sudden you say, well, now she's a prostitute. She was a victim at 16, but today she's a prostitute. That is a major flaw in our legal system. That is a victim. She's still a victim. She's been victimized because you have to understand when a woman or a man goes through sexual abuse, there's a massive innate alteration to that person's psyche, their mental capacity, how they see themselves, how they see love, how they see purpose.
Well, I've done a lot of work with abuse victims.
Yeah.
And from a legal perspective, and I'm not an attorney, but from a legal perspective, once a person reaches 18, even if they're doing something that is dysfunctional and from another place, they've reached a different legal status. But when someone is still a minor,
of course, then it's obvious.
It's four-square abuse.
100%.
Four-square abuse.
But we make laws in our country.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We make laws in our country that just does not go with how the human body works. You can't, when a girl turned 18, say, you know, today you've got to be more responsible because you turned 18. But she's under the grip of a pimp since she was 14, 15, 16.
That's true.
It's not that easy. But the law, definitely, you're right.
Are you advocating a difference or a change in the law?
It's a difficult fight. What I'd rather see is that the laws that currently exist, before we make new laws, let's enforce the laws that currently exist.
Uh-huh.
Today, there's a delineation between 17 and 18. 17 and under, you're a victim. I don't care if she runs naked across the street and asks people to abuse her. She's a victim. 17 and under.
Well, she's not a victim, but she's not at the age of consent, and therefore...
No, but by law, she's a victim.
The adult is the perpetrator.
By law today, she's a victim.
Correct.
Right? She turns 18, now she's not a victim. All of a sudden, we ask... So let's talk 17 and under.
Right.
Okay, for this conversation.
Correct.
17 and under, all right?
Yes.
Grooming is happening online.
Mm-hmm.
The internet and social media has poured gasoline on this issue because of accessibility. Because the pimp and the John, the buyer is called the John, right? The guy who's paying for sex with the child can now have direct access with the supply chain, okay? They don't have to go to that part of town on that street corner.
Hmm.
No, the child's sitting in the classroom and she's being groomed by a so-called boyfriend online. The child's now being profiled online for her insecurities.
Oh,
100%. And
terrible.
She's being victimized. Children can now self-traffic. And then you bring in things like comprehensive sex ed, which is a sex ed curriculum.
I'm so glad you mentioned it. Yeah. I've only got 1.5 minutes,
okay.
And I'm going to have to
CSE,
go, but that is exactly what I was going to ask you about.
If CSE is in your state, they're grooming
CSE,
your children.
What is it?
Comprehensive sex education.
The LGBT and kids are gender fluid.
Planned Parenthood funded, and it's for 10-year-olds.
That's exactly
and
where I was 10-year-olds
going. 10-year-olds questions like, does anal sex hurt? That 10-year-old's never even thought of anal sex. They're grooming children in the classroom.
Jocko, I'm so glad you mentioned it. I wish I had more time. Please
Thank
tell
you.
Everybody again how they can find you, how they can connect with you, and I'll try to have you on again.
ShareTogetherNow.org.
ShareTogetherNow.org.
Online, you can go to the Falkirk Center. or my name, Jaco Boyens, at social media all over the place, and they'll steer you in the right direction.
J-A-C-O-B-O-O-Y-E-N-S.
Thank you very much, Karen.
My pleasure. Thank you. We are on Spouting Off here at CPAC, special edition, Karen Cataline, and please stay tuned. We'll have more right after this.